Welcome to Legal Light, where we discuss everything e-discovery. Legal Light is brought to you by Altlaw e-discovery, the UK's leading independent e-discovery service provider, and your host, Matt Altes, CEO and founder of Altlaw e-discovery.
Welcome to Legal Light, the e-discovery video blog and podcast. My name is Matt Altes, CEO and founder of Altlaw e-discovery, and I'm joined this week by Mike Gamson, former senior vice president at LinkedIn and now CEO of Relativity. Well, welcome, Mike.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Thanks so much for coming across.
I appreciate it. Appreciate the invitation.
I wanted to talk about your speaking. You're an inspirational speaker and you speak a lot on leadership. But one phrase I've heard you use an awful lot is leadership with compassion. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, compassion is a practice that I learned from Jeff Weiner, who's the CEO at LinkedIn. And he's the person to whom I worked for 10 of the last 12 years prior to joining Relativity. And when Jeff and I first met, in our first conversation, he was the new CEO. I was already working at LinkedIn. And he said, Mike, what kind of leader do you aspire to be? And I told him that I aspire to be a leader with empathy. And he said, well, why empathy and not compassion? And I didn't know the difference between the two words well enough to debate it, but I felt like—
I don't think I do.
Yeah, it's a nuanced difference. And so I paused and I said, I don't think I know the difference well enough. What do you mean? So he told me this little parable about the difference between compassion and empathy, which the very short version of the story is there's a person lying on the road with a giant boulder on his chest. He's in great pain, clearly in great pain, as you would be if a boulder was on your chest. An empathetic passerby sees that person in great pain and feels their pain as that person feels it. And so as a result of feeling it as that person feels it, they're very unable to help because they're so energized about the pain. A compassionate passerby understands the pain the person is in, sees the world through their eyes, but can remain cool enough and centered enough to be useful. And so if you think about that in a work context, frequently a leader or even a friend at work, an individual contributor, is approached by a colleague and that colleague is energized, often could be on the negative side of the emotional spectrum. They're frustrated, they're angry, they're concerned. An empathetic person begins to resonate at the same frequency of that person, and that's not great problem solving energy. A compassionate person pauses, takes it in, understands the context or attempts to understand the context that that person is in, why they're feeling the way they do, and then they can be helpful and they can be centered. So compassion is about trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes, looking through their eyes at the world and trying to alleviate suffering when you can. And as a leader who's interested in serving people, compassionate leadership is something I learned from Jeff, and it's a practice that I'll be working on for the rest of my life.
And I know you're very, very keen on diversity in the workplace.
Yeah. I don't think it's possible to be a modern leader today and not take an approach that is an inclusive approach that attempts to find the best people in the world from whatever backgrounds they come from and to create an environment in which very different kinds of people can thrive. I mean, I tell you, as a person who came from privilege. When I say privilege, I don't mean great wealth. I mean, I was born in a time in the world, in the United States, as a white man, where the wind has been at my back my entire life.
Right.
I didn't know it until a number of years ago when I kind of woke up to the fact that I've been running downhill and many other people have been running uphill. Mm-hmm. But when you begin to realize how many things are made easier because nothing that you've done to earn it, just because of who you are and where you were born, that's privilege.
Yeah.
And waking up to that means waking up to the other side of the coin, which is that there are many people who have to struggle just to be accepted,
and start 10 steps behind everybody else.
Absolutely. And by the way, the scales are tipped and the world is not fair. So for me, it was about embracing the fact that the world is not fair. I happen to be born into a category of person that the scales are tipped towards. Mm-hmm. And so what can I do as a person to change the system as much as possible and certainly change the environments in which I operate to level the playing field and to try to create a culture of inclusivity where everyone can thrive.
During your speeches, you often pepper them with references, generous references, to people who have been compassionate to you and inspired you in your whole life. But who in your professional life has been your greatest influencer?
It's hard to pick one person because I am the product of the influence of a handful of really incredible people who plucked me off of a crowd of young people and invested in me and gave me unfair advantages to perform and succeed. The first person who really invested in me in that way was a gentleman named Steve Luzik at Advent Software. And when I was 23, 24 years old, and Steve taught me the foundations of what it meant to be an effective professional. He gave me tools to handle work that was crushing me, where I felt behind and I was failing. The next person is Dan Nye. And Dan, I worked for 5 years at Advent Software. And then he went on to be the CEO at LinkedIn for a couple of years. And Dan taught me many, many things. But the most important one was that my personal value should become the platform for who I am at work, and really should help me define a leadership style that was authentic to me and that I could be excited by. So Dan helped me understand how important the values were. And then Jeff, the person for whom I've worked for the last 10 years prior to Relativity, I learned an incredible amount from Jeff, not only about compassion, but about discipline, about focus, about doing fewer things better. And then really, I met Andrew Saja, the founder of Relativity. And I have to say, working with him over his last few years as a board member, and now the last several months as an operator, it's been extraordinary, because Andrew is an incredibly gifted entrepreneur who has taught me about what it means to be client-centric in a different way, what it means to be passionate about solving a problem in a completely new and different way, and what it means to have a big and compelling vision. It's been fabulous working for Andrew.
If we go back to LinkedIn, because you're at LinkedIn for over a decade.
Yeah, almost 12 years.
And you joined there, I read somewhere, when they had just 100 employees.
Yeah, about 100 people, just over 100.
One office?
Yeah, we were one office in Mountain View, about 100 people.
And so when you left, there was 15,000?
Yep, just under, 14,000 and change.
And yeah. 26 offices?
30 some odd, yeah.
I got it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Research.
A lot of it's not things that LinkedIn publishes, but you are generally correct. We went from not so many people to a lot, from one office to many, yeah.
I mean, you were instrumental in that growth. Mike, what's your secret sauce? We all want to do this, Grover. What's your secret sauce? How do we do this?
I mean, I think the truest answer is the one that is perhaps least actionable, which is you have to find the right people to work for, and you got to make a bet on a company going places. I hope that I contributed to LinkedIn's success, absolutely. But LinkedIn was going to be successful before I got there because of what Reid Hoffman did to found it. The idea, the timing, the engineers that he partnered with to manifest this idea of a global professional network. And so the most important thing I think one can do if one is interested in being part of an explosive hypergrowth story is to be thoughtful, extra thoughtful, about where you choose to work and for whom. Because most companies in the world don't have even the capacity to become great. When you find one that does, do everything you can to be extraordinary in the job that you're in that moment. A lot of times people are very anxious for the next thing in their role. Just be great where you are first. Second is figure out what your manager is judged by, what criteria that she is judged by. And then last, be the most valuable person you possibly can be for your manager, solving her problems. And then good things tend to accrue to you.
During the last period of your time at LinkedIn,
yeah.
And before joining Relativity, you became an angel investor.
Yes.
So you're very much investing with entrepreneurs and startups. How have you managed that transition from that, once again, back into a multi-billion pound, multinational company like Relativity?
Yeah. So maybe first on the why at all. 7 or 8 years ago, when it was pretty clear that LinkedIn was going to work out in a bigger way than I had expected, or my wife had expected, we had one of those conversations about, wow, we've been really fortunate. This has been amazing. The world has just dumped a lot of resources in our lap, experiential resources, network resources, people resources, financial resources. What does it all mean? What do we want to do with our lives? How do we contribute in a way that we would find satisfying over the long term? And so we devised a little framework for ourselves about what we cared most about and the impact that we wanted to make. And we decided that we were going to live in Chicago for the foreseeable future, the rest of our, as far as we can see into the future. And in 1997, when I lived in Chicago, I felt I had to move away from Chicago to pursue a career in technology, and I moved to San Francisco because there were no careers.
Yeah.
We're no careers in Chicago. Coming back to Chicago to raise our family in 2006, the tech scene in Chicago and in many cities around the world outside of San Francisco, Seattle, one or two places in China, and really not too many others that really produce a lot of multi-billion dollar exits. I felt like my career in tech may have been over, and it was really only through good fortune that I ended up joining LinkedIn from Chicago. So when it turned out LinkedIn was going to work out bigger than expected, I decided to invest for the rest of my life in trying to decode what it takes to take the recipe that has worked in a San Francisco area or Seattle area and apply it into other cities so that some of the economic opportunity that accrues to communities where tech flourishes can be something that we can try to spread to other parts of the world. And I decided to focus on Chicago. So I leaned into that community and began to invest financially, invest my time, added my network and access resources to entrepreneurs. And when possible, primarily with female entrepreneurs and primarily people of color, as generally speaking, the venture capital community has overlooked non-white male founders as people who have potential to create great things.
Yeah.
And so we made a number of investments and joined a whole bunch of boards and did that pretty rigorously for 6-7 years. Since I joined Relativity, I've scaled that back so I can focus on one company at a time. And I imagine in several years in the future, I'll probably open that aperture again and begin to be very active in that capacity again.
Well, Relativity has been an absolute game changer in the e-discovery community, in the e-discovery market. And coming into something that has done so well in a relatively, excuse the pun, short amount of time, what's your vision for the next couple of years? Where are you taking this?
You know, first, I just feel so grateful to be part of a company and a platform that is at the center of a community of passionate users where we are building great technology that solves a big problem. And you know, we feel very fortunate that there are tailwinds in our industry for growth. The whole industry is growing. The needs that drive e-discovery, the complexity of where documents are, of where communication is happening, the need to be in the cloud, to pull from all the sources where people are communicating, that's growing at logarithmic, at exponential speed. So the technology that has to be built to enable our users to be more productive despite that complexity, that's an interesting business problem. And so solving that problem is what Relativity has been focused on and will be focused on for the foreseeable future. You know, in addition to that, we do believe that there are adjacent problems to solve that if we are able to solve them effectively, they could reinforce and add more value into our e-discovery practitioners and the folks that are using Relativity as a platform to solve problems today that are greater than e-discovery. The first example of that in our foray into the surveillance and compliance area is a product we have called Trace. Right. So you can expect to see more of that from us in the future. Really deep dive, major investment in trying to be the end-to-end e-discovery platform that simplifies and accelerates the way that the world conducts e-discovery, and then looking for a few adjacencies that would reinforce that core.
So a lot of work coming up.
There's a lot of work. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun thus far, you know, rolling around the world, meeting important clients like yourself, and our passionate users, and getting to spend time with all of our employees. It's incredibly invigorating. I feel very, very grateful for the opportunity.
You've been very generous with your time with me today. We have one last thing
that
we do with all our guests.
Okay.
And it's called Did You Know?
Okay.
So did you know that Mike Gamson...
Mike Gamson. So maybe jumping off of a conversation we were having earlier, we're talking about food and cooking earlier. So I'm the cook in our family, and we have a wonderful organic garden on our roof. And so on many evenings, my kids and I will go up on the roof and we'll pick what's for dinner and come down and make it. And cooking is a great joy for me. So I'm not sure if people knew that, but that's what I'll share.
And one last question, very close to my heart.
Yes.
Mike, as a new CEO of Relativity, are you bringing back the parties?
I've heard rumors of these parties.
They're good rumors.
And my guess is no, but you know, one never knows. One never knows. We'll leave you hanging.
Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks.
Don't forget, subscribe, comment, and like. We'll see you soon.
Legal Light was brought to you by Alt Law eDiscovery, the UK's leading independent eDiscovery service provider. If you enjoy this podcast, don't forget to like, comment, and share, and please leave us a review. For more information on our products and services, visit www.altlaw.co.uk. That's www.altlaw.co.uk.